In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Provincial Geographic, where today we're examining the rare guy who doesn't fuck in his natural environment. Happy hour.
Wow, aren't you an absolute tenor, eh? Yeah, name's Paul, but the boys call me Mitters because I got these magic mitts. Yeah, I'll have to show you later. What are you drinking? Vodka so-sos? Yeah, we call that shit water in the pack shack. Pack shack? Yeah, it's what the fellas call a condo. We're on the 50th floor. There's seven of us in a two-bedroom, but they're cool to watch, so we can sauce it up in the den, no biggie. Got your girls here? How many of them you sauce in a little lip action to? Love to watch. Three's company, you know? Come on, I'm just messing with you. Seem like a pylon. I'm hunting big game, so I'm gonna hit some roly-poly nosies with Jonesy, and if you're lucky, I'll swing back around.
A wonder of nature. Truly inspired.
I just gotta say off the top, Alex, just bless your soul for the inspiration this week. Love it.
Who doesn't love a good nickname?
You sure there wasn't any projection happening there, Morsey?
It's a bit of an accusation. Do you remember who gave us that nickname?
The grade three gym teacher.
Yeah, back in Perth Road there. Do you remember his name?
No, absolutely not. I appreciate the guy endlessly, though.
The start of something beautiful.
Indeed.
Morsey to the grave. And by the way, like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a little, like, stereotypical kind of barn-burning talk. Just, you know, if you're going to go there, just bring a little bit of that authenticity, a little bit of respect with you, and you're good to go.
No, it's very well said. Make sure you guys give the amazing Alex a follow on Instagram, at AlexKV. That's AlexKV. She's been a big part of the Life's Rec community now, and we can't thank her enough for her support. And if you are listening to this and you're like, you know what? I'd really love for this idea, this brilliant idea that I've just kind of cooked up in the old melon to be an intro skit on the podcast. Well, like, it's your lucky day, because all you have to do is follow us at Life's Rec Podcast and at Morsey with three Y's, because you just wanted to drag it on as long as possible. And reply to the question box on our story the Tuesday leading up to the podcast.
Lately, you guys have been just on it. Like, I love seeing the shit that you guys are coming up with, because it's just, like, this one was just priceless. Like, I laughed for a solid 5 minutes.
No, this week was especially, there was a lot of good ones. I'm excited for next episode, too. We're lucky to have you guys in our community. I think that that's just, like, something we were reminded of with all of these suggestions. And we're lucky to be a part of a lot of different communities, like the community that we were introduced to through the partner of this episode, Tether.
We've been working with Tether now for a while, and it's this really incredible social media platform for men who are basically going through mental health challenges. And it's men from around the world who have just come together to support each other. Like, it's incredible. I'm very fortunate that we found them, or they found us. I can't really remember exactly how it happened. But Tether is now, like, it's available to download in the App Store or Google Play Store today. So I very much encourage you guys, download it, start connecting, and just try it out for yourselves. I do not think that you'll regret it, for sure.
Tether promo really reminds me of this episode because of, like, the importance that men talking about mental health has, just connecting with each other.
Yeah, and for those of you who just like decided you weren't going to read the title of this episode, first of all,
keep up.
I mean, like we can't like just be playing checkers.
But here, this week on the podcast, I feel like this is like the best way to describe him. If we want to get him back on the podcast,
and we absolutely do.
He's one of the most polarizing sport media personalities in Canadian history. Truly, one of our most important natural resources, you know, and just an all around, like, I don't think you can call him anything less than a national treasure.
Michael Landsberg.
Unreal chat.
Oh, though. One of my favorite interviews by far. Because not only did, like, you know, I got to interview Michael, which was obviously incredible, but, you know, then he interviewed me for a few questions. And so, like, for me, the degrees of separation between people like myself and like Sidney Crosby, Ovechkin, those kind of guys, like it's just gradually getting smaller, which is just, yeah. You know, it's funny because like everything comes full circle. Like we talked about in the episode, and I love this. When Michael and I met for the first time, my old boss at Uninterrupted Canada, Scott Moore.
Oh, great guy.
He introduced us, and Michael asked about the podcast. I told him, like, you know, this is Life's Wreck, is what we've been doing for a little bit. Told him a little bit about myself, said, like, I have anxiety and OCD. And Michael looked me dead in the eye, kitties like never met before, and just goes, like, oh, so you're a loser.
Fucking hilarious.
Dude, I went home that night and was just like, I'm a loser, and that's probably the nicest compliment I've ever gotten. And then, like, a little over a year later, that, you know, Michael let that loser interview him. So,
I mean,
I'm not going to say it, but, like,
couple of losers.
Yeah, couple of losers, exactly. This is a really open talk about depression, breaking the stigma, and medication. So, it brings me a ton of joy to welcome Michael to the podcast. Michael, how are you doing?
Yeah, it's funny that you asked that question because I get asked that question very seldom, but I ask it very often. And I you know, there's a way that I try to phrase it, and I'll do it for myself. And the question that I ask people is, if you had to live the rest of your life the way you feel, not today, right? Because you can have a bad day. I have bad days, right? But just in general, if you were to look at your life the last month, the last 2 months, how you feel, if someone said you have to live that way the rest of your life, would you be satisfied? And I think the answer to that is hugely relevant. You can't go on a daily basis or a weekly basis, but just in general, are you in a place where you could go, yeah, you know, it's not perfect. If it was perfect, I probably wouldn't be asking you that question.
Right.
But are you satisfied with where you are? So to answer your question, I'm satisfied with where I am. You know, it's not perfect, but perfect is not an option for me. So I'll take it. I would take how I feel today with my lowered bar expectation. I would take it for the rest of my life.
I think what I love about that is you hit on probably about five separate points in there that I would love to dive in on each one.
I was going to say, I hit on so many points that we're done, right?
Yeah, I think that's the episode. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Just play back that episode 20 times and you get 20 different messages. Plus, I was blinking in Morse code. So,
oh, okay. So we have like, there's another layer that I have to get into afterwards.
Another layer.
Premium content. Exactly. This is the stuff that subscribers will pay for. I like that.
Is it fans only? Is that
only fans? Yeah.
Only fans. Yeah. Exactly.
Life's a wreck, so here's an OnlyFans.
Yeah. Oh, hold on one sec.
Just no worries.
To enhance the OnlyFans.
Yeah.
The bite of the lip.
Okay, you really got to play into it. I was going to say, like, the speaking of that expectation, that lowered bar of expectation, how has that expectation changed for you over these past, I mean, your whole life? Because I know for me personally, I had this expectation where perfection was the bar. It was like, this is what you should be hitting. Everyone around you seems to be just perfect. You know, even if they mess up, it doesn't bother them like it bothers me. So I'm curious how your expectations, how that's played a role in your life.
Well, I would say that for me, talking specifically about depression, that my expectations have been lowered. And I think I've been adjusting them and learning what's realistic for the last 20 years, but in particular, the last 10 years, since I've been on the same combination of meds that I'm on right now, I would say that my expectation, you know, has fallen into this groove, which is, you know, it's not perfect. And, but also, you know, there's an acceptance for me of the side effects from the medication that are all part of the expectation. I mean, if I was to set the bar up here as opposed to down here where it is, when I say down here, I don't mean like down here, like here, if I was to say, okay, well, let's get that bar up where your expectation is sort of the max level. One of the things I'd have to do is go off the medication, because the side effects for the medication, the numbing effect that they have on me, means that I lower my expectation on what I can expect in my life when it comes to my overall mental health.
Yeah.
And if I was to do that, if I was to go off the meds and get rid of the side effects, then I run the risk of relapsing with depression.
Yeah.
So I kind of found this sweeter spot, not sweet spot, but reasonably sweet spot between the medication and the side effects and the illness itself. So I've learned where to put the bar, and I can accept a bad day, two bad days. I can accept five bad days in a month. That typically is what I experience.
Yeah. And you keep track of that, right?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I think that bar, the idea of the bar, is really important. It's probably quite controversial, because people would say, you know, you should never lower the bar. But, you know, the goal obviously is to be cured of mental illness when you go into treatment of any kind. But that's also not realistic. And sometimes you have to celebrate the fact that you're fighting, right? You know, I've used this phrase before. I win because I choose to fight. So even though I might wake up and I'm having a bad day, the fact that I got up, did my job, went about my business, is a victory. And if you only celebrate victory as in I'm cured, then you're liable to be very disappointed, but also getting there is a lot tougher, because you need to celebrate victories along the way.
How do you celebrate your victories?
Mostly internally. You know, I don't tend to express them, but, you know, I celebrate a day when I'm struggling, when my desire, my predisposition would be to disappear from the world. I don't mean take my life. I mean disappear, where, you know, lie on the couch and not have conversations with people, and to really retreat. And when I don't do that on a bad day, I tell myself, hey, you know, good for you, Michael, you should be commended, because you didn't take the easy route. And the easy route would have been to basically opt out of everything.
Yeah. And it blows my mind the fact that so many people will take that harder route, will decide to show up and fight, but they never give themselves the credit. I didn't give myself the credit for years, because it was just like, it stemmed from a lot of that. This is just what should be done. This isn't necessarily.
Yeah, for sure. You know what it is? It's the fact that where the bar is for you has to be different because of your mental health challenge, has to be different than someone who doesn't have that. And if the bar for you is low enough that you can celebrate getting over it based on some things that other people would laugh at, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like this, you know, I say proud of the shower. Sometimes you got to be proud that you took a shower. And, you know, somebody who is mentally healthy is not going to go into work and say, oh my God, I'm so pleased with myself, I took a shower today.
Right.
So, you know, the bar in general in life has got to be in different places. But I think we in particular need to acknowledge the fact that the bar is not where we'd like it to be. But, you know, otherwise, everything's a failure, right? If you if you get hit by severe depression, for instance, and, you know, you had the bar in a place of, you know, that was, you know, maximum height before that. If you don't adjust your expectations and what you celebrate in your life, you are always going to be disappointed, because you're never going to get to that same place again unless you get cured of your illness. And most of us don't get cured.
Yeah. Well, and that's even the thing too, is this idea of that perfection doesn't exist, that it's just this thing that we've created in our lives that we think is this thing that we need to strive for. But the idea of perfection doesn't matter if you're mentally healthy, mentally unhealthy, whatever, it just doesn't, it's not there. It doesn't exist. So when people set that bar, and I've done it in my own life, set that bar at perfection, I think it just pigeonholes yourself, like you said, to this life of just constantly being like, I'm just missing it. Kind of like you're trying to touch the rim of a basketball net and you just keep missing it. And you're like, man, I'm right there. Yeah, oh, and then I feel shitty about myself.
Yeah, it's true. I think in a lot of ways what it comes down to, and you said something I think is really important, is that, you know, you will celebrate with other people and their victories. You know, mm-hmm. you would say to them, hey, you know, I know you've been struggling. I know your depression is bad. And the fact that, you know, that you haven't missed a day of work, or the mm-hmm. fact that you've done this or that, you would celebrate with them and you would pat them on the back. But would you do the same for you? And the answer almost always is no.
Absolutely.
And do you know the golden rule? You know, the golden rule that your parents probably told you, unless they were terrible parents, maybe they didn't tell you. I mean, I don't know, but the golden
rule. Is it like the treat others the way you'd like to be treated? Is that?
Yes.
That is exactly. Mom and dad, not bad.
Yeah. So the golden rule is something that we all know. I mean, I asked you that question and everybody knows it.
Yeah.
You know, do unto others as you wish done unto you. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have that backwards when it comes to mental health. And I tell people that our golden rule is do unto you mm-hmm. as you have done unto others, right. because you have been there for them, because you have supported them, because you have celebrated their victories under, you know, getting over a lower bar, but mm-hmm. you've never done that for yourself. It's so much easier to be so much kinder and understanding of others than it is of ourselves. And if you continue with that, then your self-esteem takes a beating every single day. And it's not as easy as I'm making it sound, right? Where you decide, oh, okay, I'm going to celebrate my victories today. I mean, yeah. The illness prevents us from acting normally to our own achievements because of our self-esteem loss because of the illness. But mm-hmm. when you're aware of that it's happening, you have a better chance of dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, like, why would I ever celebrate somebody that I hate? And I think that for years of my life, if somebody who treated me like absolute garbage made an accomplishment, the last thing I'm going to do is just be like, oh yeah, congratulations, good job. And that was me for a bunch of years. So I think that there is that element of, like, you see somebody else doing it and you're like, wow, that's just incredible. And then you see yourself do it and you're like, oh, look at what this scumbag just achieved. Good for him. I don't give a
Yeah, no, yeah. That's really well put. It's you know, the difference between how we see every other person on the face of the earth and ourselves is pretty stark, right? You know, there's 7 billion people on the planet, and it's kind of an unrealistic argument, but you get the point. You know, yeah. Everyone in our life, we would treat a certain way and see a certain way, mm-hmm. Except for one, and yeah. That would be ourselves.
Yeah. When did you realize that the relationship with yourself wasn't normal? And I'm using quotation fingers here.
I would say for sure it was when we started off the record and I experienced my first battle with severe depression. And it was the loss of self-esteem that I experienced at that time that I think, you know, for the first time in my life, I didn't have the same confidence that I had, especially in the previous, say, you know, 15 years since I started my career. You know, I developed this confidence because I worked really hard and I knew that I had prepared myself to do the things that I would have to do, that I had total confidence on a TV set, that there was nothing that I couldn't handle. That,
right.
I mean, that's not the same as saying that, you know, I had total confidence that I could do it better than anyone, mm-hmm. but I was in control because yeah. I had this belief in myself. And then all of a sudden the illness takes it away. And now I'm still acting the same way. I'm still pretending yeah. to people that I have it all going and that, you know, it's all good. But, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't have the same belief in myself at all. I would look into the camera and think, God, you know, I'm terrible today, you know, yeah. and, you know, everyone's going to see it and everyone's going to know it. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, that was the start of the effect on confidence and self-esteem mm-hmm. and ego that everyone experiences. Did you experience that?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, everyone though. See, here's the fascinating thing about it that I have learned from giving all the talks, you know, that I've given and asking people the question, you know, how many people, I mean, obviously it's not face to face now, but how many people, you know, in a room of 200 or on virtually to 200 people, you know, how many people have battled depression? Mm-hmm. And you typically, you know, you might get, well, if people are there to hear me speak because they signed up because of mental health, then obviously there's way more people in the audience than, you know, last week I did something to TD Securities. Right. So this is just the employees that didn't sign up for this. That, I mean, maybe they did. I like to think they did. They probably were told they had to be there. But that group of people obviously is you know, more of a sampling of our society. But however many people put up their hands, let's say, you know, there's 50 people in whatever setting. And I say, okay, I'm going to tell you what depression, what mental illness feels like to me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you four things, and I want to know if you've experienced all four of them. And I'm going to tell you in advance, I believe you have, because no one has ever said, no, not me. So when I tell you one of these four symptoms, if you haven't been through it, put up your hand, right? It's not like I'm going to be mad. I want to know. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through those four, and no one has ever put up their hand. Everybody. Loss of the ability to experience joy, first and foremost, that no matter what happens, you can't feel it. And and people mistake that for, oh, you know, I have a terrible life and there's nothing good in my life. That's not the same thing as being unable to feel joy. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I mean, you can go through a bad time, pandemic, you know, you lose your job and, you know, maybe, you know, you've lost family members and you say, okay, well, you know, I'm living a joyless existence.
Yeah.
But if you got your job back, would you feel joy? And if the answer is yes, that's not the same depression I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Second thing is loss of self-esteem. We already talked about. Third thing, especially at the beginning, is the sense of loneliness, this feeling that nobody else understands me. You know, I'm like, I'm on my own on this, right? Because many of us feel it because we think we're to blame for our own illness, right? So why would somebody else feel something that I'm to blame for? Like they're not living in my head. And then there's this sense of hopelessness, this, oh my God, I'm, you know, I'm destined to be this way, this, you know, for life, the rest of my life. Right. Yeah. And we all feel that way. But all of a sudden, when you realize that this guy speaking to you has just said the four things that are going on in your head, all of a sudden now, you know, I'm not a big believer in using the term "you're never alone." I mean, on one hand, it's good, but on the other hand, it's kind of bullshit because we are alone at a certain level.
Yeah.
You know, like no one's helping you fight. You know, they can. You know, the analogy I draw is if I had cancer and I was going for chemotherapy and you said to me, "Hey, I'll come sit with you. I don't want you to be alone." That would be great, but I'd still be battling, you know, my own brain and the side effects and the, you know, I'm feeling sick on my own. You can't share that with me.
Yeah.
So I think that what you can best hope to do in doing what you do and doing what I do is have people feel understood. And that's a great way to address the idea of loneliness, because I found that it's not, you know, being lonely is not the number of people around you. It's the number of people who understand you. And you can be at a family function for 75 people and you can feel all alone, right? Oh my God, nobody here understands me. You know, like I feel like, you know, no one could ever make me feel like I was understood. And then, you know, so that's 75 people. But if there's one person at that party, you know, who says to you, "Hey, you know, how you doing? You know, I know that you had some problems," and you go, "Well, you know, I've been, you know, it's been a tough time." And they go, "Yeah, you know what? Me too. I've been going through the same thing." All of a sudden now, you know, you're not alone because somebody understands you.
Yeah. And that's powerful coming from you too, because for years you have been talking to an audience of hundreds of thousands of people.
Millions.
Yeah.
Tens of millions.
Hundreds of millions.
You know what? My God, when I hit the billion mark, it is going to be a really special day. Really,
I love that.
Special. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of, that's why I'm playing with this. I always have to have, I'm a fidgeter kind of thing. And the way that I celebrate my wins is by getting myself a bottle of champagne. And I keep the corks and I write the accomplishment on the bottom of the cork. And I've got a little collection of corks that I've got in my closet to remind me of those of the wins, and it's so really
cool. Do you drink
cool.
the champagne?
Well, I mean, come on, I can't pour it down the drain.
No. I mean, clearly, if you weren't interested in drinking it, then there would be a better way that, you know, to get a cork, for instance, that
right.
you could find another place to write it than buying a bottle of champagne and pouring it down the drain.
Yeah.
But I think that that's a really important thing to instill in people is the idea that, you know, you have to find things, your accomplishments can't be the same as, you know, the person works beside you.
Yeah,
your accomplishments have to be based on the challenges that you have.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael, I got to ask, like, growing up, I grew up in a rural town in New Brunswick. We never, ever talked about mental health. Never. It was one of those things that you heard about. You had one assembly a year where somebody would come in. You'd have this big assembly about suicide. It was somebody who had lost their child. And it was this very dark thing. They'd show a slideshow, and it would be very... I couldn't even sit through the things because while I was going through high school, I was going through really bad mental health stuff, and I recognized myself in these stories, and it was a little bit too overwhelming. You are somebody who, I feel like this new generation is warming up to the idea of talking about mental health, but you are from this environment that I would say, working with, off the record, TSN, you know, in this sports-centric, male-centric world, where... it's almost surprising to me. And I think it makes it even more inspiring to see you talk about this stuff. So I'm kind of curious, why'd you decide, hey, listen, this is the platform. Like, I'm going to start talking.
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with you from the standpoint that I am a really good advocate for mental health talk. And I don't mean in the way I do it, but the fact that because of my job and because of the swagger that I have and because of the apparent confidence that I have on the surface, that you would look at me and say, not him, no way. And then you would look at me. Yeah. I mean, I still hear that. Like, there's still people to this day who think I did it just so people would like me, right? Like on television. And I said, you know, that's
one big marketing ploy.
Yeah. I mean, for real,
yeah.
that's what people, especially at the beginning, thought. And I said, hey, you can think that all you want, but very seldom in life do people make up mental illness. It's the kind of thing we actually hide as opposed to make it up.
Yeah.
So I think that I'm a good person for that because I don't figure into, you know, like the profile of it. And second of all, the world that I come from, for sure. And I made the choice. I would like to say, okay, so you got two halves. You've got the, you know, Order of Canada nominee, I'm making this up, half of me, which was, you know, I decided one day that I was going to take the pain in my life and I was going to put a purpose to it, that I was going to open up to people and I could change their lives by my own stories of mental illness.
Right.
You know, that sounds really good, but the truth is that I just want to ask a good question. And we had a guest on Off the Record named Stephane Richer, who was, you know, a two-time Stanley Cup champion. And just before I went to the green room, I read that he had battled depression in the 1990s. Like, I can remember this article, and it was like the last paragraph. Only by chance did I see it. And also only by chance was he on the show after I had had the worst year of my life when it came to depression. So I was kind of fueled by... I was feeling good about myself and my illness. So I went down there and I said, Stephane, hey, can you step out of the green room for a second? I said, look, you've never met me before. You don't owe me anything. I just want to know if it's okay if I ask you how you're doing with your depression. And he said, well, I'd rather not talk about it because it's really painful. And I said, okay, hey, you know, And I'm glad I asked you because I certainly don't want to cause you any pain. But if you'll talk about it, I'll talk about it. And he said, you? And I said, yeah, me. And he went, no way, not you. And, you know, it gets to the, you know, you don't look like that guy. So I told him, I said, look, you know, I know a little bit about your story and you're the last person that should doubt whether a person that doesn't look like the person with depression has depression. So he said, okay, let's do it. So we went on the air, we talked for maybe 2 minutes and I thought that was it. But what changed my life was the next day when we started getting responses from people. And they all basically said the same thing. Hey, Michael, watching you and Stephane Richer talk about depression on television was the first time in my life I've seen two men sharing their mental illness without appearing to be shamed or embarrassed or weak. And because of that, I'm telling you something I've never told another person. I mean, that's what that's what every email said. I'm telling you something I've never told another person. I battled depression too. And because I heard you guys talking about it, I'm telling you now, and now I'm going to go get the help that I should have gotten 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So that's how, so I came to it though, you know, unintentionally, right? Like I said, I you know, I'd like to say, you know, I just decided. And there's also the other part to it that is, this is incredibly easy for me. You know, like I know for Stefan, it's difficult for him to do. It changed his life too, because, you know, he told me, you know, I walk through the airport and people come up and hug me. This is, you know, what he said. And, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, that's amazing that the two of us had this experience. But for me, this is the easiest thing in the world. You know, like I'll often say to this group of people in front of me, hey, how many of you think that I'm courageous? And, you know, everybody puts up their hand and they say, look, you know, you didn't have much choice, right? You know, but I believe that you think that. And, you know, it'd be kind of a dick move if I was going to say, yes, I am. Yeah. I am courageous.
Every one of you with your hand up, you're right.
You're right. Yeah, and I'm sure you feel really good about being in the room with a courageous person like me. But I say, no. So my point is that I'm telling you that you're wrong. This did not take any courage because I had no fear of it. I don't know why. It's not like I overcame the fear, but I never had it. So you know, to be courageous, you need to have fear that you've overcome and you've put your fears to the side and said, I don't care what I'm afraid of. I'm going to swim out to the middle of that lake or 100 meters offshore. Mm-hmm. I'm petrified that that person that's drowning is going to drag me under, but I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. That takes courage. That's a hero. For me, I'm just a guy who gets to use all of the assets in my life. You know, my ability to talk, the platforms that I've been given, the illness that I have, and the fact that I've always been open about the symptoms and the characteristics of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just one of those people that kind of lucked into all those things.
Yeah, that's funny. Why do you know why there wasn't fear? Because I feel like I don't. Yeah, yeah, that's just very interesting to me because I mean, for me, I knew that when I talked, like when I first decided I was going to start this podcast, it was very much the okay, am I going to be alienated by my friends? Is my family going to be worried and am I going to feel like that burden? Like are people going to start seeing me different? It was that element of like it was kind of like this gun to my head ultimatum where it was like, okay, well, either I start talking about my mental health or I'm not going to be here much longer. So I kind of had to, and thankfully I was, you know, very well received and it's become this thing that's bigger than just me. But, you know, I would think that somebody in your position, stereotypically, with everything that you had going on, that seems like a step off a cliff.
You know, to others, it does. And for some, it has been too, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to a guy yesterday and he said, you know, I just heard a story. I just started talking to him about helping out on Sick Not Week. And he said, you know, he was working and he was working at a bank and he had to take time off for depression.
Yep.
And when he went back, basically his boss said, you know, you'll never be a leader in this company. You'll never be a senior. Like you want to run a certain division. That'll never happen. If you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of others?
Right.
And I thought, oh my God, you know, like who, first of all, who would say that?
Yeah,
you know what that's like? That's like saying to a person in front of you, you know, we don't hire Black people, you know, or you won't be promoted. Like it's so absurd that someone would be so ignorant to think that that's okay to say.
Yeah.
But also my point is in his case, you know, being totally open, you know, has, you know, made his life more challenging. But for me, you know, I think part of it is how you tell the story. And I think you tell the story of, you know, your mental illness by, first of all, you say it as strongly as you can. Because if you talk like you you know, I don't know why I get like this. You know, I have this great life and, you know, I have so many good things in my life and I don't know why I'm like this. That's weak, right? Sounds like I'm blaming myself for my illness. But if it's like, hey, I got this illness, you know, it's, I'm the victim here. I'm not apologizing for it. And you need to accept it or not accept it. I could care less whether you do. Exactly. I mean, I'm not suggesting you do that to your employer,
right?
But the tone is what you do. Like, I don't care what you think, you know, and people tend to, I think, accept it in that context more than they do if you're apologizing for somehow having this illness.
That's a great point, because I think it's so true. I think that the more you come at it from a place of, I am not ashamed of this, the more people look at it and go, oh, okay, well, if he's not ashamed of it, then, I mean, that just means that for him is something that he is handling. It's managing. It's not that shadow that he's carrying around that's like taking over his life. He and the shadow are walking side by side, and he's like, yeah, this is like the shit that I deal with, but it doesn't change who I am. These are two, you know, this is a separate entity that affects parts of my life, but that's who I am. That's how it is.
How can I ask you some questions?
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah. Well, also, what are you going to do? Say no?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm your guest.
Yeah.
So, try to keep the answers shorter than I had them. because I want to get background. So how old are you?
22.
And where are you right now?
St. Stephen, New Brunswick.
Okay. And what, when did you first experience, something less than mental health?
I was probably 5 or 6. I was a really anxious child.
Yeah, me too. I mean, my anxiety started when I was my earliest memories, and my earliest memories would be not the same as yours, obviously, because they were longer ago for me. And when was the first time that you went for help?
I was going on a school trip over to Europe, and I had extreme claustrophobia. And so I went to a therapist when I was in grade 8 for my claustrophobia. And that was the first thing that I ever went to a therapist for.
And did you go on the trip?
I did.
Yeah. You see, I avoided trips. I avoided all kinds of things like that for a host of reasons, a host of fears. You know, there were no other reasons other than these fears that that I was never really too public about, too. So I had to make up lies and excuses. So when was the first time was that the first time you went for treatment?
That would have been the first time I went for treatment. In terms of like, it was very specifically focused on claustrophobia, though. The first time I went for like overall mental health treatment was grade 11. My mental health started to decline when I was in high school, like grade 10, and was just on this steady downslope. And I basically hit a very rock bottom area of my life in grade 11. Grade 12, I was worried about university. I was worried about just kind of like the trajectory that my life was on. I just thought that I was just this gigantic loser. And now I kind of own the fact that I'm a gigantic loser. But at the time, it was something that I very much kind of fought. Grade 11 was the first time that I actually went, and they said, this is more than just.
Okay, I've been trying to have this conversation with my wife without actually saying the words. So what were you saying, Kara? Do you know who I'm on with? It's what's his face. by the way, just as an interjection case, Kyle, unbelievably good. Seriously, like you are such a mental health rock star. But keep in mind, I've lowered the bar.
Thank you. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We talked about that. Yeah, it doesn't take much. Yeah,
no, but you are. That's why I'm interested in your story. So have you ever been on meds?
I'm on meds now. Yep. Yep. I started at the very beginning of the pandemic. I started working with a doctor at Ryerson where I was for school. We had met at the uninterrupted internship there that one time. So basically while I was doing that uninterrupted, when I met you for the first time, I was having a anxiety attack every 2 days. I was just in this incredibly dark place. And so I went to, the people at Ryerson were really great. They were the first people that I really trusted with the full extent of my mental health. So I went to them. And one of the doctors who I still work with today, we've worked together for the past year and a bit. He put me on meds at the start of the pandemic, 25 milligrams of Zoloft, which got kicked up to 50 milligrams of Zoloft, which I take every day now.
And do you find that it's made a difference?
It has emphatically changed my self-perception, which has allowed me to go in and do the work. It's quiet. It's kind of like, you know, when you're driving around and it's like really busy and you turn the radio down so you can focus more.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what Zoloft did for me. It turned the radio down so that I could actually go in and do the work.
Nice. I like that. I don't know if I like it enough to steal it, but I'm going to weigh my options here.
All right. You've got my permission if you want to take that.
Okay. So what are you doing now?
I mean, a lot of this, focusing on LifeSurrec and the brand and taking care of myself for the first time in my life, which feels pretty good. Honoring what I kind of need within a moment and running with that, doing a little bit of supply teaching as well, which is great. Being able to have a little bit of an influence on that next generation is always a powerful thing. And then a little serving on the side because everybody needs a little bit of extra spending money.
Everybody does. Do you think you're good? Do you think you're a good voice for mental illness?
Certainly hope so. I do think so.
Yeah. I hope so is, this is not the time for humility, right? You know, because I'm asking for a reason. So, it's like after I give a talk, my family will say, how'd you do? And I'll say, it's not really for me to say, right? You know, that you'd have to ask someone in the audience and they'll go, no, but really, how'd you do? And I'll go, well, you know, I killed it. Right. You know, I don't say that every time.
Oh, dude.
Like when I'm not at my best, I'll say that. But so, I mean, there is a time for honesty. So because you are really good at this and you are a surprisingly young person to have this level of sophistication. And also, you know, you're from the East Coast and I thought people on the East Coast were always stupid. So that's a big thing too. I'm kidding.
Whoa. All right. Yeah, interview's over. No, I can't deal with this slander.
Actually, I just told you that you were the only smart person in all of the Maritimes. Right. So you should take that as a compliment. But
my listeners are just going to be, you think you got bad emails before. Oh my God. Here we go.
Bring it on. Because if you can't tell that I'm joking, then you are stupid. Right.
I got you.
So it's like, if you send me an email and say, oh, you said a terrible thing about people in the East Coast. It's like, case proven.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. No, honestly, man, like I do think I'm a good advocate for mental health, and especially in my area. Like I have seen the impact of my work in my immediate area, and that's one of the most fulfilling things. I've seen people who I played high school football with who are carpenters or plumbers who have reached out to me and talked openly about their mental illness and have went for help because of it. I've, you know, within like the scope of New Brunswick, I've made a difference, and that means the world to me. But I did my first ever keynote the other day for the Canadian Mental Health Association, 40 minute keynote, and I got off it and I was like, you know what, I fucking rocked that. That was 40 minutes of just pure unfiltered mental health talk, and it went extremely well and it was well received. And
Is that virtual? I do. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
It's a weird time. To some extent, I mean, it's much easier to do a speech. I think it's harder virtually because you have no energy to draw on, right? You're looking into this little green light, and you know, the tip that I would give you, and it sounds like you didn't need it, but is you got to be way more animated and way more energetic than you think you have to be, because you know, everything around you kind of says flat, right? Like I'm sitting in the kitchen now in my house by myself, and you know, where am I drawing energy from, you know, for that? So
maybe that piece of art.
What's that?
It's pretty good. That piece of art's pretty good though.
But you know what, I'm gonna if need be, next time I'm giving a talk, I'll just do this and go, wow, I feel energized. But I think that the good thing about doing something virtually is that people are anonymous, and that can be really powerful. Like if you do a survey, because a lot of platforms allow you to do surveys, and you say, how many of you have you been diagnosed with a mental illness like depression or anxiety? And if you ask that to 200 people in a room, especially if they're not there because you're talking about mental health, if you're there because you're speaking to their company, then a lot of people will not say it, right? They don't want people around them to know. But if you do it anonymously, then people are way more likely to be honest. I mean, I asked a question. I have never, I seldom ask this in person, but you know, I've asked this question virtually. How many have you ever had suicidal thoughts? And whether you've acted on them or not is not relevant to what I'm asking now. But have you had those mm-hmm. thoughts? And I always thought, you know, if I asked that question in person, it'd be like 10%, 5%. But I've found sometimes as many as 60% of people have said it. And that, like, wow. that shocked yeah. me. Like, that was the, and that, that was an educational moment for me.
It is that beauty of allowing people to control the level of which they want to be transparent is a really power. And that's why, like you said, the virtual thing is great, because after my talk, we had a Q&A portion afterwards, and there was, I think probably about, there were 62 people in this call.
Hold on.
And
was it 60, 61 or 62? I need to know. It's good.
Sorry. 62. Very precisely 62. Yeah. Those extra two were the kind of like that raising the bar, right? But there was probably about 5 or 6 people afterwards who it was like anonymous submission. Thank you for this. This is something that, like, seeing you being a younger mental health advocate talking about this, I'm a young man and I think that it's now time for me to see what I can do about my own mental health. And it was that level of like, I'm like, that's, I don't need to know your name. I just need to know that, like, it just impacts me in a really incredible way to know that that little bit of me just kind of saying like, yeah, here's what I've went through, kind of here's how my life has went from rock bottom to sitting on a call talking to Michael Landsberg, Canadian legend Michael Landsberg.
I thought we decided on Icon.
Sorry.
Man,
I knew it.
Also, you could add, you know, really a gift to all of Canada. You know, one of our great blessings,
Canada's prodigal son.
One of our great blessings is the Rocky Mountains and the beautiful Maritimes and Landsberg
and Michael yeah. Landsberg. I love that, man. Dude, it's true though. I mean, it is a pretty incredible thing to be able to have this kind of impact just by talking.
Yeah.
And just by having these conversations. Is that not profound to me to think that, like, just us hopping on this call and us doing this very well could change someone's life. And to me, that is crazy.
Yeah. I feel the same way. And I'm always shocked by getting that kind of reaction where someone reaches out and says, last week I gave talks to 3 different companies. Right. And afterwards I always give out my email address and say, you know, yeah. message me if you want. And, you know, I'm always shocked to hear the effect that my story had on other people. And it's, you know, I mean, that's not boasting, right? As I say, and as you've proven, I say all the time, look, you know, I'm not unique. I'm not the only one who can do this, but, you know, I'm the one who's chosen to do this, that you have chosen to have speak to you. But I know that if I can't impact your lives, then I failed, right? Because, you know, sharing mental health as deeply as you can possibly do it. So you're going way beyond the surface. You know, it's one thing to say, I have depression. It's another thing to say, I have depression and it kills my self-esteem. And that's why it's hard for me to do my job. That's where the real value is. And, you know, I think that different people can impact different people, if that makes sense. So you can impact people that I can't impact.
Right. Yeah. And I think that that's the importance of storytelling, right? That's the importance of representation. The more people who are talking about this, the more people see that and go, holy shit, I'm not alone.
Exactly.
It isn't that, it isn't that a power.
You know,
thing.
I can do that too. Or, hey, you know, I think that so much of this is when you're speaking to people is convincing them that they need to share with someone to start with. No one should keep this secret. Yeah. First of all, if you don't share with anyone, then you don't get help, right? I mean, can't help, you know, you can't prescribe medication or you can't do therapy for yourself. You need to share with someone. Yeah. And when you do, you need to share it with strength. I mean, you need to practice it because you want them to see you as being strong. You want them, I mean, when you're speaking to CMHA and the 82 people that you were talking to,
62.
I kind of thought you were an 82 person guy, but, you know,
I'm on my way. Don't worry.
When you're speaking to the 62 people, you have the ability to convince them by your tone that mm-hmm. they can do it. And it gets back to what I said before, you know, if you talk, well, you know, I, you know, like that whole sort of tone of your voice, which is, you know, I'm not saying it loud because, you know, I'm just not accustomed to saying it loud. And, you know, I kind of don't know why I get like this. That is not going to convince anyone to share. But if you say it with strength and you say it, you know, whether you do this or not, you know, typically I don't do that, but in, you know, in certain groups I would. I'd say, you know, this is me. My name is Michael Landsberg. I battle an illness called depression and anxiety. I'm not ashamed. I'm not embarrassed, and I'm not weak. And if you think that this is self-inflicted, if you think this is your choice,
send them. Let's talk about Sick Knock Week. We got a little bit of time left, and you have kind of coined the phrase, and you and your family have coined this phrase, sick, not weak.
It was pretty much all me. And yeah, it was pretty much all me. Yeah,
fair. I wanted to kind of try to spread the love a little bit.
It's pretty funny because my daughter, Casey, works with me on the charity, but she, you know, I mean, she doesn't have, you know, a ton of contact with people, right? That's kind of my job in a lot of ways to do that. And yet people will send notes as recently as like this morning. Hey, I just want to say thanks to you and Casey. And she's like laughing. She's going, I didn't do anything. Yet, you know, here I am getting thanked. But I mean, Sick Not Weak is a statement.
The philosophy.
You know, it's a philosophy. It's an argument. It's a demand. It's a rally cry. You know, it's a revolutionary. No, it's a revolution statement. I don't mean that it's revolutionary, but it's like it's a million different things. And if people would embrace that, I believe the stigma comes totally from the idea that mental illness is a weakness, that somehow, you know, 100%. It's a choice, unlike other illnesses. You know, you choose. To, you know, you choose to have made yourself vulnerable, and because you're weak, you got hit by this illness. And if people saw it as, you know, as being, you know, cancer and diabetes and lupus and depression and you know, like if that list was all grouped together,
this slots in there,
it would, I think it would be very different.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's funny because the idea of weakness, it gets thrown around a lot. That strength, weakness, you know, we put people on this scale. We go, okay, weak's over here, strength's over here. Now, where are we going to kind of like gauge you? And it's true, like the more that you just really look at it and you go, I didn't ask for my brain to reabsorb serotonin at a rate that then depletes my serotonin. And then now I'm not happy or that I get anxious or anything like that. Like, what do you think? I woke up one day and was like, oh, you know what?
Yeah.
The same way that I can move my arm up and down, I'm just going to like absolutely fry my serotonin receptors. Just doesn't make any sense. So once I think it stems so much from education as well. And education through empowerment and storytelling is just like where you just get people who are like, oh, that's lived experience. That is somebody who's just saying like, hey, this idea that's been tossed around for so and carried this weight to it is actually this little balloon that you can kind of swat out of the way when you actually look at it as what it is, which is a sickness of the most complicated organ in your entire body, your brain. And it's going to take some time. And sometimes it's chronic, the same way you can have Crohn's disease or something like that, that is going to be persistent throughout your life. It's just in a different part of your body. So why are we looking at it differently? It's interesting. I think it's the world of mental health is a very intricate, beautiful place. It's very cool.
Nicely said.
Thank you. I appreciate it. The last thing I want to ask you, and first of all, I mean, like, it really does mean a ton to me to be able to hop on this call with you. You are somebody who very much throughout my mental health journey, I know you cured a million times and blah, blah, blah. You've had an impact on the work that's been done through Life's a Rec, because seeing somebody who, you know, when I was at Ryerson in sport media, it was like, you know, yeah, it was like Michael Landsberg. This is like the guy, you know, off the record. He does that, you know, he does that thing. And sorry?
No, I was going to say, you know, I appreciate all of that. Yeah. But I think what you found out is that anyone can do it. Yeah. And not the same way, but you know, like it's not like
I do it the same way.
Yeah. Well, and you couldn't do it the same way as me, and nor could I do it the same way as you. And I can't, you know, you can impact people that I can't impact and vice versa. Yeah. And you know, the fact is that, I came by this by chance, by luck. And in a lot of ways it's provided me with as much as I provided it. that, you know, the whole act of sharing in the way that you and I have just shared, you know, with strength, I think strengthens the sharer, and for sure makes a difference to the sharee. And I don't know if that made sense, but it made sense in my head. So that's,
and that's, you
know,
all that matters.
That's good enough for me. But yeah, you know, exactly. You know, we live at a time where these messages are needed. They shouldn't be, but they are. And sharing is contagious. The illness isn't, you know, you can't catch depression from someone, but you can sure catch their confidence to share. And that's what you do. And that's what I do. And, you know, there's something really, really cool about putting a purpose to your pain, getting to use the worst thing in your life as one of the best.
It's true. You know, it's so funny. And I feel like this is one of those things where I've got this last question that I want to ask, but every time something comes up, I'm like, I have to speak on it. Last night we were, when I was, so this Cork is celebrating 10,000 downloads on the podcast, which is, you know, a big moment for me and my family and everybody who celebrated the, or supported the podcast. And I was sitting on my deck last night around our fire pit, drinking this champagne with my best friend in the world, and I was saying, and I you know, there was a break in the conversation at one point. I sat there and I was like, man, I have to be honest with you, like, I'm really, really proud of myself. And he goes, dude, I'm really proud of you too. And I said, it's one of those things that, like, you can always make a podcast or a YouTube channel or something like that, and it does well, but when you take the absolute darkest, most, like, shitty parts of your life, and that's what you turn into the most impactful, powerful, and important part of your life, and it goes from that complete, it's like that complete seesaw opposite. I was like, that to me is an accomplishment that I will never fully be able to, like, comprehend, but I will always appreciate. And he was like, that's what it's all about, man. And so, yeah, hearing you say that, I very, very much resonate.
Yeah, it's not often you get to use the worst thing in your life as one of the best. No. So I didn't understand what you said, that you were celebrating. What were you celebrating?
10,000 podcast downloads. So the podcast has been listened to 10,000 times.
Amazing. And how many have you done?
This is 53. Yeah. Yeah. So it's amazing. Been quite something.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, if you're ever wondering, you know, the whole idea of strength is really important. And they, you know, even more important, obviously, is the perception of weakness. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that's really effective to say in front of a crowd is to say, okay, you know, there's 200 of you out there and there's me up here. Who do you think is the strongest person in this room? And they'll always say you. I mean, first of all, it's obvious what you're talking about. Second of all, they don't know the same amount, obviously, about other people. But also, you're up there sharing your mental illness, and people see that as a strength. So why is it in their lives they see it as a weakness? Why am I strong and they're weak? And if you can convince people to think about that enough, you know, maybe you can change the way they see themselves.
It's beautiful. It's very beautiful. How can people interact with your with everything that you do? Sick Not Weak, your own personal work.
You know,
because it's all personal work.
Yeah. I would say I'm on Twitter all the time at Hey Landsberg. You know, we have a Facebook page. We have a website, which we're just redesigning and rebuilding, sicknotweek.com. Nice. And I have a website that I use to sort of tell a bit of my story as opposed to the Sick Not Weak story, michaellandsberg.ca. So there's, you know, like, lots of ways to do it or don't do it. You know, it's like I always feel like, you know, I'm not big on promoting the charity because somehow it seems unseemly, even though, you know, I gain no benefit from the charity other than, you know, trying to use the worst thing in my life as one of the best. So that's how you can track me down. I do a blog every day, the Daily Lands blog. And, you know, if you like it, then go and watch the other 1800 that I've done since March the 10th, 2016. So, I'll see you after watch those, 1800. Enjoy.
Yeah, it might take a second or two. The last question that I have to ask you is at the end of every episode. And again, thank you so much for taking the time. Is that I like to give a challenge out to my listeners, something that they can implement their day, their week, their month, just anything that has personally helped you and that you think will help others. And so I think that you are one of the best people to ask for a challenge to put forth for anybody who is listening to this episode when it comes out or in the future, whenever it may be.
Well, we're talking about people that may have a mental health challenge.
Yep.
Yeah. Write yourself a note. On a good day, write yourself a note that says, "Dear me, on a bad day." You know, because you can predict what you'll be thinking on that bad day, right? And, you know, all of us are worried that the bad day is going to continue and lead to two bad days. And if you're on medication, you're afraid the medication isn't working anymore. And if you've been through it 100 times, chances are on the 101st, it's going to go away, right? If it does every single time. So you write a note to yourself. Hey, sick Michael, you're full of shit if you think that, you know, that you're slipping. You go through this, you know, 5 times a month where you have a bad day, and do not make the assumption, as I know you are, that that tomorrow you're going to be even worse than today, and that you may think today that you're not good at anything, but you are actually good at some things, and here's what they are. And I think that note can be anywhere from irrelevant to life-saving. Mm-hmm.
Michael Landsberg, Canadian icon, mental health advocate. Just some loser with mental health issues just like me.
Exactly.
I appreciate your time, man.
Exactly. Thank you.
Just a couple of losers, eh?
No, like you said, full circle. I'll give you that.
You love to see it.
Oh, dude, great chat too.
I'm telling you, there's something about talking with other men about all of this. It's nice.
It's cool too, because like you said, you looked up to the way he opened up about his depression.
Yeah, he definitely...
Like you mentioned it, like over and over and over.
Okay.
I'm not done. Over and over and over again, which was just awesome to hear.
All right, I'm you know, enough of a professional here to admit that I maybe indulged just a touch, but you know, enough of a criticism on my just class A interviewing skills. Highlights, what do you got?
I'd say in terms of like actual content from the episode, I really liked that parallel between like the do unto others as you want done to yourself, but kind of flipping that back onto you, because I feel like so many people when they're going and us included. I mean, like when we were really going through it, it was that idea of like, you know, everybody else deserves the best. Everybody else deserves the world, and we deserve like fucking. So that was really nice. I think like in terms of like the overall episode though, like I just love, I fucking adore how much this man cares. Like, I mean, the guy literally draws on himself how many bad days he has so that he can keep track. You know, he does a daily vlog to share his experiences with people across Canada. Like it just gives a shit. And I love that.
No, it's so well said. I like when he called me a mental health rock star. Personally, that was pretty
fuck off.
Pretty cool.
Don't do anything stupid.
Guys, check out Michael on Instagram and Twitter at Hey Landsberg. And make sure to follow at Sick Not Weak on both socials as well. Michael and his family just do incredible work and are taking some serious strides in helping, like, honestly, like, fix the way that we look at mental illness. And everyone here at Life's Rec, we look forward to helping with that.
This was just a great episode. And I'm personally exhausted. So if I'm exhausted, we're the same person. So you're exhausted. So this, our lovely listeners, is where we leave you.
I couldn't agree more. Enchanté, everyone. Thank you.
New yet. Let's just stick with what we know.
Okay. Just remember that even for somebody like Michael Landsberg, life's a wreck.
See you guys in 2 weeks.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.